妈妈妈妈。
Leamy Heller from Unconditional Parenting. Welcome back to Look Ma, No Hands.
I'm so excited to be back here with you.
I was just telling Leamy before we started recording that she is like the only person on Instagram that I haven't met that I actually feel like I have. Like, she feels like, I'm pretty sure I've cried on her voice notes before. I know I have when I was hormonal in my pregnancy. She is as incredible of a person seems on Instagram. She's even more amazing, like, face-to-face or boxer-to-boxer, whatever you want to call it. So I'm so grateful you're here, Leamy. Thank you so much for coming back. I want to dive right in. If you don't follow Leamy Heller already, I hope you will. She's at Unconditional Parenting on Instagram. She is the person I have probably singularly learned the most from as a parent on my parenting journey. And she absolutely speaks to my soul. She speaks to like my inner child and what my child wanted when I was a kid from my parents, and she helps me give what I wanted to my children. And it's just magical and I love it, but she doesn't want you to think that she's an expert. And I love that about her. And so I'm going to actually let her explain that. So recently on Instagram, Leamy, you have like, what, like 150,000 or something followers, okay? And everyone follows you because they want to hear your advice. They want to hear what you have to say. And you come out and you're like, hey guys, listen, I'm not an expert and I don't want you to think I am. I'm not going to try to paraphrase you or quote you. I want you to explain this because I thought this was the most profound thing I've ever heard. You just go for it.
Okay. First of all, I just want to thank you for everything you've said until now about me. I was super touched. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I'm very touched by everything you said. Thank you. Yeah. So I never felt comfortable with the idea of being an expert, meaning I always knew that I don't know. That there's so many things that I don't know. And even though I have really strong convictions about things, and even though I'm obsessed with this information, and I've read so many studies and so much research, and I know so much about attachment, I still recognize that at the end of the day, there's still so much we don't know. And when I, and all, besides for the fact that there's so much we don't know, even with every situation and every parent and every family, there's so much nuance and complexity. Like, I can share something, right, that's maybe great advice for so many parents, but really awful advice for a parent in a specific situation with her or his family. And so I became increasingly more and more uncomfortable with the way that I was sharing information that kind of didn't leave room. I felt it didn't leave room for other perspectives or for different realities. It kind of sounded a little bit dogmatic to me.
I am so, so grateful that you, it was so brave to do what you did, because here you are with like all these followers. No one's asking you to say this, but you said, you were thinking like, I'm uncomfortable and I feel like this needs to be said. And as one of your followers, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, because we live in this world right now where like, there are so many experts and so much advice coming at us all the time. And hearing our own inner voice, which is, I feel like, the single most important thing we can do as a parent, is so much harder than it used to be. And we've got this sort of like catch 22, because some of the advice, I mean, we need it, right? Like, we obviously, like, it's obviously helped us so much as a generation to parent our children. But at the same time, it can really drown out what you know is really right for your own child. And I think I really experienced this firsthand when, you know, one of our kids got into play therapy, and it was like such a fantastic experience. And this play therapist who was working with one of our kids basically gave us sort of like a personalized protocol for that child, for the difficulty that that child was experiencing at the time. And no one on Instagram could have told me that. People on Instagram, in fact, were telling me the opposite when they had really good intentions. And so I love that you had like this disclaimer, like, listen, I believe wholeheartedly in this style of like, I believe wholeheartedly in what I'm doing, but we were doing like behavioral parenting, like less than a generation ago. We were using corporal punishment with our kids. And like, that was what you were supposed to be doing. So let's make room for the fact that like, we don't always really know.
Exactly. And I love what you said about the inner voice. That's what I came back to, is that I realized that when an expert speaks as if they know, it does many times drown out a parent's own inner wisdom, their own inner voice that's telling them, I don't know how this sits with me, or I don't know if I really like this. And honestly, like what you said, I think that was the problem of the previous generation. The reason why so many parents did use corporal punishment or whatever is because they weren't tuned into their inner voice. I really believe that, I know this for my mother. My mother has told me so many times that someone gave her the advice to do this or the advice to do that, and she just listened to them because she felt like that was the right thing to do. And really everything in her body was screaming, no, like these are your children, don't do that to them. And so I think that some parents were so out of touch with what was going on inside of their bodies that they couldn't even notice or understand what was going on, which that's a whole other topic. But I was really, really wanting to incorporate much, much more of a parent's inner wisdom or an inner voice, or, you know, their what was naturally coming up in their body. I think that what happens in our body is communication. And I really want to, moving forward, leave much more room for a parent to also include what's going on for them inside of their own bodies, the wisdom that's being communicated to them about themselves and their own families. While, of course, taking in wisdom, like you said, it's the wisdom that I've taken in from the outside, from experts, in quotes, has been so helpful to me. However, I'm realizing even with myself now, I'm sick and tired of experts telling me what to do. Like, I notice even myself, I don't want to hear anymore. I'm done. I'm like, I don't want to hear you tell me anymore. Now I want to follow myself. Now I want to follow my wisdom and what's coming. Like, what I, you know, I trust it at this point enough to be able to follow that. And that's what I want to do.
I absolutely love that you just said that. And I think the goal of all wisdom that we take in, right, is to help us learn to find our own and to help us learn to find our own answers. You talk about listening to your body's wisdom a lot. I want you to elaborate on that. I understand what you're talking about, but I think it's a really foreign concept to a lot of people, and it is so vital to life to really tune into what your body's telling you. You talk a lot about feeling constriction in your body when you hear certain things. So I'd love to hear you tell us more about that.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love that you're asking me about this. Like, this is something I'm so passionate about right now. So yeah. So here's the thing. It gets really tricky because people say, like, okay, listening to my body. Let's say my child is supposed to get a shot, right? You know, for a blood test. Okay, blood test. And they need it for their health, but they're nervous. And therefore, I'm really nervous. And so my body's feeling nervous. Are you telling me then that we should just not do the blood test? Is that what listening to my body means? And so I say, no, listening to our body means including what our body is telling us. Not ignoring our bodies. Our bodies is not like, oh, you know, the be all and end all, or like the dictator of what happens in our life. No, that will be terrible if we just follow our body. But our body's communicating something important and precious. So what is my body communicating to me when I'm nervous for my child to get the blood test? It's that I care about my child. I care about the pain that they likely will experience. I care about the nervousness that they feel. That's what that's communicating to me. So that means I want to include then that care. I want to somehow, in some way, care for their experience, which will mean explaining to them what's going to happen, sit with them through that, through the emotions and through the fear, and be there as a supportive presence, etc. It doesn't mean not doing what we need to do, but it means including it. And so I believe that to always listen to our body. Like, there's no such thing as the body being wrong. People say, like, oh, but what if you're, you know, afraid for because of your past, because of what happened to you? I don't care. That's wonderful. So that means there's something there that wants to be included. There's something important there maybe it is the fear from, like somebody told me, you know, I'm so afraid to, when my child is doing something that's not okay, to remove my child, because when I was a child, I have so much trauma of feeling unwanted. And I'm worried if I remove her, she's going to feel unwanted herself. And so therefore, I don't want to remove her, but I'm realizing that it's really important for her to be removed because everybody else is getting hit. So like, I don't know what to do if I follow my body and don't remove her. And so I say, so to me, it's like the fear of your child having the feeling of not being wanted, to me, is beautiful. Let's include that. Now, including that doesn't mean not removing her. It can mean removing her and then having a discussion with her about it, being there for her if, let's say, that is what came up for her. You know, this the parent has trauma about not feeling wanted because nobody was there for her when she felt unwanted. Nobody even knew that that's what was going on for her. Nobody, you know, she was alone with it is basically what I'm trying to say. And so, you know, we might have to remove a child and they might in that moment feel a moment of like rejection or whatever that is, but we can we can be there for our child through it. We can actually bring it up afterwards so they're not alone with it. And in that way, we can care for what our body's communicating to us. For me, it's all about including what's coming up for us. And for me, there's always a precious, really, it's a need. There's a need that the body is trying to care for when we have those feelings. And oh, about contractions, you said, yeah, so a contraction, any feeling that's a contraction is our body trying to move away from that thing that we just saw or read. You know, if I see a post and I immediately feel a contraction, it's really, if you think about it, it's contracting, right? So it's moving away from everything on the outside and moving towards myself. It's my body trying to be like, go closer to yourself, come closer to yourself, move away from that, which is so beautiful. And so in that way, my body's communicating something about that doesn't feel right to me. And maybe it's not that that advice is terrible or I shouldn't do that advice, but what is my body telling me? Let me include that. And including that doesn't necessarily mean not, like I said, not following that, like not removing my child, but removing my child in a way that considers their feelings. Or you hear what I'm saying? So totally. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wanting parents to do. Yeah.
So you recently shared this video that reminds me of what you're saying. And I was laughing so hard. And it's this woman and she's on a plane and it's kind of making fun of quote unquote gentle parenting. And her kid is like kicking the crap out of the seat in front of him. And the person in front of him says, like, could you please get your kid to stop kicking my seat? And she says to her son, you know, gentle feet, gentle feet. And so he starts kicking the seat in front of him gently. And the person says, your kid's still kicking my seat. And she said, but he's using gentle feet, you know, let's encourage that. And you sort of said to your followers, like, is this what some of you guys interpret gentle parenting to be? Like, I do think it's what a lot of people think, quote, gentle parenting is. What you just said really explains how that's not at all what gentle parenting is. It's like incorporating, you know, maybe you don't want to correct your child in that moment, but why and what's going on for you? And like, yes, you feel uncomfortable, but it's still probably or could be the necessary thing to do as opposed to completely enabling. It's not, what do you call it again? It's not a gentle parenting. It's not enabling. It's not permissive parenting. It's not permissive parenting. Exactly. Yeah. It's not permissive parenting. And I've read a lot of things that either are like maybe feel too permissive to me or feel way too punishing to me when I'm like gathering parenting information on Instagram and just to be able to tune in to like what actually works for me. On the other end of the spectrum, I've had so many moments with my children where we're having such a wonderful time together and we're so connected and we're playing. And I'll remember something like Dr. Becky said on Instagram that day. And all of a sudden I'll ask a question like, how do you feel about the fact that we're playing with red toys right now? And it'll just be like so awkward and weird. And it's like, this isn't me. Like, this isn't necessary for what's going on right now. And, you know, those moments are totally harmless, but it's a funny way for me to kind of zoom out and get perspective that like, you've got this, girl. Like, you've got this. Like, all this information is here to kind of help you listen to you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like it shouldn't, Well, you know, I don't want it to move us away from listening to ourselves. It should only add to it, you know? And it's exactly, I found myself doing so many things at certain moments that were totally not me. Cause like, oh, that's what I read you're supposed to do. But that's just not me. And honestly, I think that so many times we consume so much parenting information because we don't want to make mistakes. You know, like parenting is such a huge responsibility. We take it so seriously. We love our children. We really don't want to screw them up or screw it up. And that's why I think we consume so much information. But to me, I've come to the conclusion that I'd so much rather make mistakes from a place where I was following myself versus making mistakes because I was afraid because somebody on Instagram said that if you don't do this, then this is going to happen, or this is the way to do it, or right? So I feel like even if my kids come back to me and say like, mommy, like, why did you do that? Like, if I was following myself, I feel like even though I might regret it and feel sad and hold space for my child's, you know, pain, I'll still feel like at least I was following me. Like, I think there's so much more regret. Like I said, I see with my mother when you were following somebody else. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, I wasn't even following my own self when I did that.
Absolutely.
Like, why? You know?
Absolutely. And especially when it's sort of on the more, and this was like in my earlier days as a parent, when it's like on the more punishing end of the spectrum. I mean, I spent years thinking that my oldest child needed to learn how to go to bed on her own, even though she desperately wanted me to stay with her. And you know what? She just doesn't want to. She doesn't like going to bed by herself. Maybe she will when she's 10. I don't know, but guess who doesn't mind staying with her? Me. What I did mind was feeling like I was a failure for staying with her. That was agonizing for me. Every night that I finally laid with her telling myself that I was failing because she needed me and I was staying with her when Big Little Feelings and Dr. Becky and whoever all have this protocol for saying goodnight to my child and closing the door. And if I were a good enough parent, I would be able to do that. Actually, that's not true. And I'm a really good parent because I know what my child needs from me. And I'm starting to listen to that and give her that when I can. And I can actually, I'm capable of giving her a lot more than I realized. It was the part of me that felt like I can't do this because, you know, good parents know how to follow like the Big Little Feelings protocol. And one of the things that I love, I mean, I love like everything about you, but one of the things that I love the most is how you really like, when before I started following you, I would read like a lot of books by parenting guides and parenting experts who really like portrayed the parent-child relationship as sort of being like the person in charge and like the person who is at the whim of the person who's in charge. There wasn't really like a lot of respect for the child, even though like there was a lot of feigned respect for the child. And like this part of me always felt uncomfortable with that power dynamic, but I didn't know how to like put my finger on it. And you were like the first person who brought that to light and said like, okay, so we're both people here and we both have wants and needs. And how can we negotiate this in the parent-child relationship without degrading our kid? And people now will ask me, you know, what parenting books like are the have been the most helpful for you? And I find myself like, I'll send them stuff that I read like 3 years ago. And I'm like, if I read this now, would this still be helpful to me? Because so much of the way that I think now is about connection. So all these books were like, you know, connect before you correct. When you're connected to your child, they'll listen to you more. Well, it's actually not about getting them to do anything. It's just about connecting with them. If you're connecting with them for the purpose of getting them to do something, you're still not really connecting with them. You are the only person I've ever heard say this. And I love it. I love it.
Wow. I can't believe I'm the only person you've ever heard say this. But what you're saying now is like, oh, I'm so happy you brought this up because this is something I feel so strongly about as well. I actually, and that's the thing about following myself, for the longest time, I felt like maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I don't know, because all the experts are saying something opposite, but it just doesn't feel aligned for me. It doesn't feel aligned. Like exactly what you said about the parent being in charge and the child being at whim and like this feigned sense of respect. Oh my goodness. I felt that so deeply. And I was like, I don't know. I don't like this. I really believe that it can be about two people and about exactly having each person's needs met. And of course, I am the parent, meaning like I am responsible for my child. And there is definitely, we have different roles in the relationship, but that doesn't mean that we can't work together and that we can't be considerate of each other's needs. And I'm leaning into that style of parenting more and more and more. And I love it so much. And I'm so sad in a way that I didn't follow it sooner, because I was so worried about like these ideas of like being in charge. And there's like there's a real strong, I don't know, messaging in our culture about these things. And what drives me crazy, and you sort of pointed to that, is when we make things right and wrong in parenting. Like we speak as if like leaving the child in their room is the right thing to do. That's great if it works for you and it meets your needs and your child's needs, fine. But don't talk about it as if this is the way and that if you're a good parent, this is what you'll do. And if you don't, it's somehow harmful towards your child. Do you want to hear something, Laura? And this is the first time I'm sharing this publicly. I was thinking, like, should I even say this? My oldest is almost 12 years old. She's going to be 12 in 3 weeks. I still, my husband and I, well, we take turn, we alternate. We still lie with her every single night in her room, not in her bed, every single night when she goes to sleep. And I love it. And I am like already feeling sad for the day when she's not going to want it anymore because I know it's coming. And I loved it. And I'm so happy I did it for all these years. And I also felt exactly like you did. There were points in time where I was like, I can't stay with her. Like it's, she needs to be alone. Like when she was 4, 5, 6, and I did, there was a lot of struggle. And so finally I was like, no, I love this. I enjoy spending time with her. I have time for myself. For me, it met my need and it met her need, and I love it. And I'm so happy that I did it. Like literally, now that I know it's almost over, I look back and I'm so grateful that I followed myself and that I did this, because I enjoyed every almost every moment of it. There were some times where I was like, I can't do this. But in those moments, I really tried to honor myself. I would tell my child, you know, I have to go now. I can't. And she would understand. And so I really, really, yeah, I just wish that all parents would feel more permission or more room to like listen to themselves, like I said, and really ask themselves, like, who said this is wrong or who said this is right? You know, I think there's so little, there are definitely things that I think, I don't even like calling them wrong or right, but there are definitely certain things that we would be considered harmful towards a child. There are definitely, you know, and there are definitely things that would be helpful towards a child. But I believe there's so much gray in between where it doesn't have to be like, oh, if you do it this way, that food is another big one. Food. Huge yeah. one for me. It's like division of responsibility is like the way to do it. That is the right way. And if like you give your child what they want to eat, then in some way you're some permissive parent. If it doesn't work for you and you're neglecting yourself as a parent, then I understand it. But if it works for you and you're happy to, you know, give everybody what they want, why not? I eat whatever I want. What's wrong with a child eating what?
Oh my gosh.
As long as it's nutritional. Yeah.
When it comes to food, like that is so something I've gotten so hung up on as well. Like there's so much out there about, you know, your child should eat what's on their plate. And if they don't, you know, they can have a piece of cheese or whatever. Or like they're not having anything else or they're not, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, are you kidding? Like I have Girl Scout cookies for dinner sometimes. Like my, can you imagine if somebody put chicken nuggets and ketchup in front of you? And like some vegetables and said, this is dinner. And then you didn't want it. And they were like, tough luck. I'd be miserable. I eat whatever I want. I make sure my children have nutritious options.
Exactly. It's like balance, by the way, and balance nutritious options. You think I haven't given my child, or she's asked for like popsicle in the morning for breakfast? She's had that more than once. Not every single morning, but once in a while, why not? I know when she comes home, she'll have blueberries and strawberries and broccoli. Yeah. It's like, okay, so this morning she wants that. Like there's so much, we put so much emphasis on like, it's wrong to do that for breakfast or it's right to do that. And really there's so much room for a parent to find what works for them and their child. And I love giving my children what they want to eat. Again, if I'm able to, I'm not, you know, a chef who's like, can always give my kids what they want constantly, but as long as it works for me, and sometimes I'll ask them to prepare it for themselves. Okay. You want that? No problem. But this whole, like, you know, like I see it framed as something wrong. Like I'll even hear, you know, some experts say like, the child is taking on the parent's responsibility if they decide what to eat, something like that. And I was like, what?
Oh, I saw that recently. What? Yes, that's the child. I saw that recently, that's the child's job. You're like, there's a child's job and a parent's job. The parent's job is to provide the food. Yes. The child's job is to decide which of the food they're going to eat. And I'm like, no, this just like doesn't work for me. This doesn't work for me. I want my kids to eat. I want to make sure they have food. They literally won't have dinner if I said that to them. And I think so many more parents are in that boat than in the boat of being able to actually successfully navigate that type of mealtime strategy. Like I don't think that works for most people. So I'm I'm so glad you brought it up.
Yeah. And that's one area that I also felt really worried about, like following myself with it, like thinking like, oh, there's a right way and I should be following what experts say. Until finally I was like, I am going to do what feels right for me. And guess what? Ever since then, it's been incredible. And I'm amazed by how much more my children have expanded their palates since I've stopped, you know, doing the whole like division of responsibility thing. You know how they always say like you have to do it because otherwise kids are not going to be exposed to other kinds. I eat a bunch of kinds of foods. They're exposed to it constantly. Actually, my younger one loves dairy. Like that's her primary. She loves dairy. She doesn't like really chicken or meat so much. She hasn't touched meat for like, you know, basically since she's like a little baby. And just recently she started expressing interest in meat and she started eating meat. She just had tongue the other day. Yesterday specifically she told me, I don't want dairy. I want something meat. Can you give me something meat? And it's just amazing to me that I'm like, you see, I love that I trusted myself with this. I love that I just followed myself and didn't try to shove meat and chicken and be like, these are the only options that we have, or you can have cheese. Like you said, you know, a slice of cheese. Instead, I was like, okay, like I'm happy to give you what works for you within reason, you know, and it worked so well for us.
And gosh, I've so been there. Like, how miserable is that when like you just suddenly start questioning everything you're doing and you see something on some video on Instagram where a parent is like, your kid should have chicken and broccoli at every meal. And like, then I'm like, you've got to eat the chicken and broccoli. And they're like, no, I don't want chicken and broccoli. I want yogurt and like something else. And you're just freaking out and you get into this sort of control thing with your kid and it's miserable. And I love that you said you saw that same video. I think I did, about the division of labor at mealtime, and you just saw it and you were like, what the hell? And like, I love that. I love that you just knew this is crazy, because I saw it and I thought, am I crazy? So, you know, I think we're all getting there, like listening to ourselves. And I love that you're such a voice and such an advocate for helping parents do that. I think that's amazing. I want to ask you, you know, this episode is actually supposed to be about elements of sibling relationships. So we're going to get there. But before we do, I want to ask you one more question. I think of you as being a sensitive soul, because I'm one. So I identify that. So you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. She's nodding. And you have put something.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I've definitely always felt. Yeah.
Yeah. You've put something out there that's so like vulnerable. And it's like your own, it's your truth out there in the world for like 150 or plus thousand people. Obviously, I don't know how often this happens to you. Is it daily that you get negative feedback or commentary? How do you deal with that emotionally? How do you deal with it publicly? How do you deal with it?
Yeah. So to be honest, I wasn't vulnerable or honest until I felt like I could handle any feedback that would come my way. When it felt too scary for me to do that, I didn't do it. I've been getting negative commentary, yeah, pretty much on mostly all of my posts. The ones that are more popular usually get more negative feedback. And I used to like, my whole body used to react, you know? I used to have this like full blown, like, oh my gosh, somebody doesn't like me or doesn't like what I said. And it would really get at me. But what I've really like learned through taking courses is that the person messaging that, there's something vulnerable going on for them. And that's where their comment is coming from. Like something, right? Speaking of like listening to our body, something's going on in their body where they're having resistance for a reason, or where they're like, you know, like we say, triggered for a reason. And I really started having compassion for that much, much more. I even can sometimes tell by the comment itself what likely is going on for that person. Sometimes I have no clue, but a lot of times I do. And you know what? So beautiful. Should I tell you the craziest thing? That when I have the energy and the time, I don't always, I'll respond to that person with compassion. And you don't even know, because most people don't see, a lot of these people end up DMing me privately and saying things like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk like that to you. I'm just having such a hard time. And they're so much more vulnerable with me. Like they'll share like their doubts and how it made them feel insecure. And I'm like, I knew it. See, I knew that was underneath that. I knew it. Yeah. So I see people as much less dangerous than I used to. And the negative comments as much less dangerous. So when I hear it, yeah, I really try to see it as like something vulnerable and in a compassionate way, not like, oh, something's going on with them. You know how sometimes we say it in that kind of way? No, but really like having compassion for where they're coming from and understanding that, yeah, there's something important there for them. So that's really how I deal with it now, mostly. And even if I don't necessarily even have an interaction with them, in my mind, I convert it to that, you know? I'll be like, oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Something here is touching something for them, or yeah.
At any point, did that ever deter you from wanting to share your message?
Yes, yes, yes. When my account first blew up, like there was one post that did extremely well. It got like, I think 2 million likes or something. That 1.9 million, something like that. That post of mine, my account blew up after that. Like I got tons of followers.
What was that post?
That post itself, I got so much. Ooh, okay. So I actually have a little regret about that post now, but it's the post about a child who basically is like a people pleaser. And you see how it progresses, like from when a child is born, that they feel such a desperation to please their parent. And then they're always the good kid and they end up like losing themselves, essentially, which is like the story of many people. And I think that's why it resonated with a lot of people. And of course, though, a lot of parents felt extremely ashamed by it. A lot of shame came up for them reading it, because they're like, oh my gosh, am I doing this to my kid? Or even if they saw themselves in the things that I wrote. So yeah, so it went viral basically. And that's when I started getting a ton of negative comments. Before that, I didn't really get so many or even such harsh ones. And so at that point, I remember being like, oh my goodness. And that was really hard for me. That was around, was it a year ago or 2 years? I don't remember. But since then, I've really started, seeing it differently and dealing with it differently. And I've gotten to a point where, I actually welcome the comments. I'm actually, every time I see one, I used to see it as a challenge to myself to sort of be like, can you transform this message? Can you see the vulnerability underneath it? You know? And now I really welcome it. Like, I'm not afraid of the negative comments. I'm like, they're all the same to me. They're all just comments.
I absolutely love that. You said that you have some regret about that post that went viral because you felt like it brought up a lot of shame for parents. What are some of the ways that you feel like you've restructured what you share so that it speaks to both the parent and advocates for the child?
Yeah, exactly. So of course, I can't control how people feel. And of course, some people who read it didn't feel shame. And of course, some did. Like, everybody experiences things differently. And I'm not trying to control how parents feel, but I am, exactly what you said, trying to include a parent more in what I share. So a parent is their own person who comes with their own background and experiences and struggles. And I find that in my posts in the past, only showed a child's perspective and didn't include enough of what a parent was going through, what they were experiencing. And I really want to I started feeling like I really want to hold parents with care as well. Like, if I want them to treat their children a certain way, then I want to treat them that same way. It's almost like I want them to experience being cared for, and that will sort of give them the, whatever it is, the energy or the idea to care for their children in that way. And I wasn't doing it like that. And so I'm trying to, moving forward, to really be much more sensitive to a parent's experience and what a parent is going through and a parent might feel reading this, and then to include that more. And I'm still not sure exactly how to do that, but I'm trying. I'm really trying to. I really want parents to receive that, like a sense of, being considered and cared for as well.
I absolutely love that you have not only considered that, but that you took the time to ask parents on your account, how can I better support you? How can I help you take this in while you also feel cared for? Because I read something the other day that said, we're really the first generation of parents who are learning how to treat ourselves differently, essentially, based off of the way we were parented, and at the same time, treat our children differently. So we're doing both at once. And it's pretty miraculous and pretty incredible. And to hold ourselves with compassion is certainly not something I was taught. I don't think a lot of us were taught that. So to not hold ourselves in compassion while also trying to give compassion, right? So to hold ourselves in compassion while trying to give compassion to our children, it just doesn't work. It's miserable. I feel like I'm dying inside when I do that. And it's definitely something that comes and goes for me. I can't give something I don't give to myself because it feels like I'm going to shrivel up. It's awful. So we have to do both at once. And I love that you have made space for that and recognize that parents, like a lot of us, are really wounded children. We came from really, really challenging backgrounds. And we're those kids who just didn't get unconditional parenting. We didn't get somebody talking to us this way and making us feel loved and appreciated and nurtured. So to have not had that and then to be responsible or at least try to give it to another child is a huge undertaking, and we deserve compassion. And I love that you make space for that and you see that. And that is like such a sign of somebody who's really, as they say, doing the work. Like, you're not just giving it, you're really giving that compassion that you ask, that you try to give children to everybody. And I love that. I love that about you, Blamey. Really, truly.
Oh, thank you. I haven't always done that. Speaking about wounded children, I think that so much of my parenting content actually came from my wounded child self, where I was like, parents, don't do this to your kids. Don't hurt your, and kind of like, I was almost like, it was like my child self was speaking, which I think, by the way, I don't have regrets around it or even shame. It's like, I think that there was so much usefulness that came out of it. But I've gotten to a point where I am no longer speaking from that. I mean, I think that part of me is always going to be with me, but I'm not speaking from that place only, and recognizing that, like, parents, like I said, parents are people too. Exactly. And that I also want them to have compassion for themselves, and I want to have compassion for them too. I want them to experience the compassion from me, not only from themselves. You understand? Like, I don't want to have to, I think that a lot of parenting accounts, like, put it on the parent to feel compassion for themselves. It's like, well, I'm advocating for the children. You take care of yourself. You do the work. You feel, you teach yourself how to have compassion for yourself. And I think that's wonderful, but I want to be somebody who actually extends compassion to parents. I want them to experience that from me as well.
I love that. I think that's so wonderful. And I'm so grateful for you.
Look Ma No Hands is brought to you by Maxwell Media, my very own company, where I build straightforward, gorgeous, and affordable websites that are optimized for all screen sizes. I've been designing websites in Squarespace for over a decade for countless happy clients, and I help my clients feel proud, excited, and confident about their websites so they can attract the kind of clients they're looking for while effectively communicating their mission or business goal or marketing their products. More than that, I also offer business and life coaching services. If you're looking for direction in your career, uncertain of what to do next, or feeling like you're just not the person you were before you had kids, I'm here to help. I would love to guide you in this next stage of your journey. Visit me online anytime at maxwellaspen.com to read client reviews, learn more about my services, and send me a message. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Speaking of not listening to ourselves or getting really nervous that we're not doing it right, the reason I asked you to come on here for every reason. I love talking to you about everything, but I've gotten a lot of questions recently about siblings. So you and I did an episode on sibling rivalry, which is one of my favorites. It really blew my mind. It was one of those episodes where I thought, I've heard all this. I'm just sharing it with other people. And guess what? I hadn't heard all of it. So if you haven't listened to that episode, listen to it. It is fantastic. It changed the way I parent both of my children. I mean, at the time, there were just two of them. Now there's three. It was amazing. I need to go back and listen to it, actually. So I have three girls. My oldest child and my middle child get along incredibly well, and I'm not going to take credit for that. I will tell you that there are things that I've learned, and I think those things have contributed to my children getting along really well. I've definitely contributed to them getting along really well. I'm going to own that. But I also happen to have an oldest child who she'll probably be like a camp counselor or a teacher or something at some point in her life. She absolutely loves children. She loves little babies. She loves little kids. So baby Violet, who's now four, was and is, you know, her treasure. She just loves her little sister. And that was perfect because Violet loves being the little sister. She's in love with Selma. She's in love with her big sister. They get along really well. They bicker like any child does in the car. They have moments, but they do get along really well. In comes Jolene. Selma is still Selma. She absolutely loves her little baby sister. Her baby sister is a treasure. She wants to be with her baby sister all the time. Violet, she likes Jolene. She's still in love with Selma. She's not really into like little kids the way Selma's into little kids. So Violet and Jolene don't necessarily interact on their own as much as Jolene and Selma do. There was a time in my life where I'm pretty certain I would have intervened on this to no end. Violet, don't you want to hang out with Jolene? Look, Jolene wants to play with you. I know a lot of parents are out there doing that because I actually get so many DMs when I share pictures of my kids together saying, oh my gosh, your kids get along so well. What are you doing? What can I do? My oldest kid isn't into my youngest kid. This is a huge element of concern for parents. And I didn't realize that at some point something shifted for me. And I just, before Jolene was born, and I'm like, if they get along, we get along. If they don't, like sometimes people don't get along. Like, do you get along with everyone? No. Am I going to encourage them to respect each other? Totally. But like, I don't know. They might not be best friends. They might be best friends. I want you to come on here and talk about this because I'm looking at Bleamy right now. She's nodding her head. Do siblings need to like each other, Bleamy? Do they need to like each other?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I love where you got to. And honestly, where I'm coming to more and more in my parenting is realizing how little I can control and how much relief there is in recognizing what I can't control. And I think so many times as parents, we experience so much frustration, like, oh my goodness, because we're trying to control what we cannot control. We're trying to change reality. We're trying to, your children, you can't change them. You can't change them. I don't know if this is revolutionary for parents to hear or it's not, but you cannot change your children. Yes, you're there to guide, to lead, to support, but that's it. You can't do more than that. You really can't. And we have this notion that we can change our children and that we can somehow. And no, you cannot. And actually, I think all our attempts to do that, to try to change them, usually only backfire in some way or another, whether overtly or covertly. But yeah, I think it's just let it be how it is. And your job is to simply be there to support, to facilitate, right? And not to get in the way. not to get in the way. Like, yeah, you never know what will happen in a few years. But if we're trying so hard to make them friends, many times we can turn them off from wanting to be friends, if even if eventually that will naturally happen. But also maybe they'll never be friends. And that's okay too. Like you said, respect each other. Sure, of course. We want to promote respect for everybody. I believe they'll love each other too, because siblings, right? They're bound. They're family. They see each other every single day. I believe that there will be love, but will they like each other? I don't know. Will they ever be friends? Maybe not. And I don't think that's a travesty. I really don't believe that we need to, it needs to even be something that's sad. You know what I mean?
I love that you're saying this, because I will share these pictures, like a Violet and Selma or Selma and Jolene. And every single time I get like multiple message, like, how did you get them to get along? And so what I want to say is like, oh my God, like, please don't feel like you need to get your kids to get along. A, B, like, okay, have I like nurtured their individual qualities and characteristics and given them each what they need and respected their differences? Like, absolutely. And I never compare them to each other. And yes, like, I do all these things that absolutely contribute to them not hating each other and to them respecting each other and to them, you know, getting along and like, and loving each other, as you said. But as far as like whether or not they like each other, or like that golden dynamic between Selma and Violet, that like Violet just eats up being the baby and Selma eats up being the biggest, like, that happened to me. That is not something that I created. And then I've got a baby and Violet in the middle. Yeah. And like, Violet's like me when I was a kid. I could have taken or left little children. They were not something that I was obsessed with. Like, Selma lives for little kids. And I'm like, yeah, that was never something I ever thought of. And like, that didn't make me a bad person. That just made me that was just how I felt. So Violet will get really excited. Sometimes she'll help me every once in a while, like give Jolene a bottle. She like really loves it. And I can tell when she's doing it because she's getting this feedback from me too. Like, look at you, like you're being a big sister or what. But it's not the same as like with Selma. She's not totally eating up like this big sister role. She loves being the little sister. That could change. Like, who knows? But me getting all worked up about being the sole person who's responsible for making them like each other. Like, could somebody make you like somebody else? Could somebody make you want to be close to somebody else? No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no way somebody's going to make me like somebody else. Actually, if they try to make me like somebody, you can bet I probably will really want to stay far away from them. But so that's what I mean about not getting in the way. Yeah. Like, I think the more we try to push it in a way, sometimes, like you said, so I think that there's things that we can do to contribute, exactly like you said, to them respecting each other and not getting in the way more than anything else, I think. Like I discussed in the sibling rivalry course, sometimes we'll do things that we don't recognize, you know, drive a wedge between them or build resentment between them. So those things I think we have control over, but not whether they like each other or not, you know? And also I did want to leave space after I said, you know, it doesn't have to be sad. I think for some parents, I want to leave room for the fact that some parents might feel sad about it, and that's okay. Like, I just want to say it doesn't have to be sad, but if you feel sad, like, that's, I really want to create space for whatever comes up for parents, because they might have had this idea in their head that their kids are going to like each other. And if they don't, it can feel very sad for them. And that's totally understandable. And also another thing, I really recently spoke with a parent and her kids don't get along. They fight all the time. And that's hard for her. You know, like, she doesn't take the blame for it. She knows it has nothing to do with her. They just really don't get along. But it's hard. It's hard for some parents when their kids are constantly at each other's throats because they're so different and they really don't like the way each other function in the world, you know? So it can be challenging for parents too. I just want to acknowledge that.
What did you say to the parent whose children are fighting all the time? Did you give her advice? Like, what did you say to her?
No, I didn't give her advice at all because she didn't ask. I only empathized with her. You know, if she would have asked me, I first would have had to understand their dynamic better to see if there even was anything that she could do differently or what, you know, but I just empathized with her because my heart felt for her, you know, because I was like imagining what it's like for a parent, you know, to have kids who are constantly at each other's throats. It's stressful. I know it's stressful. Like, when my kids fight, even though like I have a lot of skills and a lot of tools, I find it stressful. And I can imagine having that much more often than it happens. It's hard. And so I had a lot of compassion for her, and I really just empathized with how difficult it is.
You've managed, this just struck me while you were talking, you have managed to sort of build this real career for yourself while being a very present parent, I'm imagining. Your children are older. You don't have to disclose their ages. I think there's two of them. I don't know how old they are. Tell me about that. I want to know more about that. and how that's maybe helped you in some way as a parent, if it has, or if it's given you something that's that belongs to you. I was just thinking that when I was listening to you.
Yeah. So let me just double check that I understand your question. Are you wondering if what I've been doing as a, like in my career wise, if that's contributed to my parenting?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people, when they think about present parents, right? They think about maybe somebody who is home all the time or completely devoted to child rearing, or doesn't necessarily have anything else going on besides just trying to go to the bathroom alone. You have like your own thriving little hustle going on, not so little. And at the same time, I'm going to take a wild guess that you're also a very present, nurturing parent. So I want to hear more about what that looks like for you. And if you feel like maybe having your own passion has in some way contributed to being a present parent. And what made me think about asking you this question, because it seems unrelated, was you were talking about a situation being really stressful. And I thought about what helps me feel a little bit less stressed in my life. And part of that is having something that is my own, my career. I want to hear like more about that if you have something to say about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now I understand your question. So I have a huge need. I mean, we all have a need for this, but I think for me, it's something that's very like always been front and center for me is a need for meaning in my life, meaning and purpose. And I don't think that parenting alone would have been enough, even though it's a huge source of meaning and purpose for me, would have ever been enough for me to really feel like I was meeting that need. And so the fact that I share this publicly with parents and that I do what I do really is a huge source of meaning and purpose for me. Huge. And actually, I believe fulfills me so much, gives me so much that it really makes it easier for me to be present with my children, because I believe that the more our needs are met, the more we can show up for our children. And so because my need is met through what I do, I find that when I am able to be with my children, I can really give that to them because I feel so filled up in a way. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, it's 100%.
Yeah. And at the same time, it also sometimes takes away from my parenting, if I'm honest. Like you were saying, you're a present parent. Sometimes because I'm so busy with, you know, oh, I have to make this post or I'm responding to parents or I sometimes do, it is distracting and it actually does take me away from being present with my kids. Sometimes they will complain about that. Someone recently asked me, what do my kids have to say about like the fact that I do this as a job? Like this is my thing. So they love it because they do find it contributes to the way I parent them because I'm so passionate about it. It's like always something that's on my mind. And at the same time, sometimes they are like, mommy, stop. Why are you doing that this whole time? You know, and they really feel sometimes like I'm too busy with it, which I agree. Sometimes I am. And to find that balance can be hard. But at the same time, I also believe that for me, at least, you know, I don't think that I have to be available for my kids 24/7, like presence, I should say. Available, yes. Present 24/7 in order to be a present parent. I believe that it's more when I am with them that I am present. So that's what I really try for. And that's what I really aim for is that when I do spend that time with them, it's that my phone is off and that I'm fully present. But even that sometimes I struggle with. And it's something that I constantly really, really try to prioritize because I feel better about it. Like I really walk away feeling like regretful if I wasn't fully present. So does that answer your question?
100%. I completely relate to everything you just said. I recently like relaunched my own web design business. And when I was like doing my own website, I was kind of like on fire with it. It was all I wanted to do. And I started feeling like my kids were distracting me from it and they were complaining about it. And I'm like, oh my God, am I going to feel this way forever? And then I wrapped up that project and now I feel much more and balance with it. But I so have been everywhere you're talking about. And I think that's so human. And I want to ask you one more question. You are a parenting coach as well. You offer courses online. Make that two more questions. One is, what is the question that you get most often from parents and how do you respond? And the second question is, if you could tell parents anything, if your purpose was just to give parents one message, what would that message be? So the first question is, what is the most common question you get from parents and how do you respond?
Yeah, I have to think about that one. When I first started out, the most common question I would get was, how do I get my child to do ABC? How do I get my child to, you know, anything? And I think people at this point already know that that's not my jam. So they won't ask me those kinds of questions anymore. I think at this point, it's mostly questions that have to do with like their children's feelings. Like, how do I deal when my child, you know, complains about how my spouse is parenting them? Or how do I navigate it when my child like is having such a hard time in school? Or how do I sort of more questions about like, how do I navigate my child's feelings? That's sort of, I think that's probably the most common theme right now that I hear from parents. Did you want me to answer that question, or will you ask me, or what is it one thing I want to tell parents?
I'd love to know just generally how you respond to that question.
Yeah. So when it comes to feelings, it's very simple. I mean, it's not simple to do, but it's a very simple answer. And it's usually just empathize with them. That's really my like go-to. Now, again, is that always the case? No, sometimes you have to do something about it. Sometimes there's a solution that you need to find. But I find that those things become clear once you empathize. So if let's say a child is complaining about how the spouse is parenting them, I say, just empathize with them. There's no reason to discuss whether the spouse was right or wrong or nothing. Just hold space for whatever they felt. And then you can share what the child shared with you with your spouse if you think they'll appreciate it and want to shift something or change something. Or you cannot if you think that they're not going to want to. Or let's say a child's complaining about school. You can simply listen, simply empathize. Yeah, it's hard for you. If something is going on, it will come up most likely if you create space for it. And then you'll see if something needs to be done about it. Or nothing will be done about it because it's just that they don't like school, because school is just not a fun place for children to be, in my opinion. So, it's really more about, for me, it's like, start with that. Let's start with simply creating space for a child's experience without rushing in to fix it or to try and change it or to think that something needs to be done. It's just be there for them and listen.
Okay. I'm going to ask a third question. You just said school is not a really fun place for children to be. Do we do something about that? What do you mean? Are you doing anything about that?
Oh my goodness. you don't even want to get me started. I still didn't answer the question. I still didn't answer the question of what's one thing I want parents to walk away with, but I'll answer that afterwards. So yeah. With schools, this is another huge, huge passion of mine, is that I really, really, really believe it's high time that we change the way schools function. I don't understand why it hasn't changed yet. I don't understand why we do things the way we did them hundreds of years ago. Well, school's not even around for that many years, but from when it started until now, there's very little that has changed. And I really think it doesn't take into consideration everything we've learned about child development and even just looking at our children, like the fact that they sit in desks, they have to raise their hand, they have to ask permission to use the bathroom, they have to ask permission to eat, they're not allowed to talk when they're not supposed to. There's one teacher who's lecturing at them all day. They have to sit the entire time while they're lecturing. They're not allowed to move around. They're not allowed to follow their interests. There's somebody else who decides what they need to learn. Like, the whole thing just doesn't make any sort of sense to me. And I think that we've already learned that there's different ways to teach children and we're just not implementing it.
Yes, 100%. It's like such an archaic. I'm so with you. Like, I love school and I'm really grateful for it. And I think it teaches my children things I can't teach them. And I'm really amazed by what my child's kindergarten teacher is able to teach my child. Like, it's unbelievable. And that being said, I also think there's certain things about it that are just so dinosaur-esque. And when are we going to have a conversation about this? And I've seen you like a few times starting to have a conversation about it a little bit. I'm like, ooh, I think I speak your language, girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to. So the two things you asked, what am I doing about it? The two things I'm trying to do is first to have more and more conversations about it, to speak about it more in the open, because I think a lot of parents feel this, but they think they're the only ones, or like, maybe I'm wrong. And it's like, just to create space that there are a lot of people who agree with you and who think this way. And like, there's like, speaking of like, follow your inner wisdom. If it doesn't feel right for you, like, maybe it's not right for you. And so that, and the second thing I'm really trying to do, but it's much harder, is I actually really want to open my own school, a micro school where we are much more, I'm trying, and it's, I don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Ben, I'm really sorry. We're going to have to move
really,
again.
Really want to start.
Yeah. We're going to have to move.
Yeah. I really want to, because I'm realizing that changing the way the system was in the past is much harder than just creating something new and giving people a paradigm to work off of. Like, I think people just need to see a different way and be like, oh, cool, I actually like this way. And then I'm hoping that will create a revolution. I don't know if it will, but at least I want it for my children. So I don't know. We'll see.
I love that, Bleamy. You are a revolutionary. You're amazing. I'm just honored to know you. And so now you can answer the real final question. I wanted this to be the last question on the podcast. If you could just tell parents one thing what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think I would say, and it really goes back to like what we've mentioned so much on this podcast, I think I would say to, like I said, follow your inner wisdom. If something, like, don't worry so much about things being wrong or right, unless they really speak to you as being wrong or right. Like if you're like, yeah, hitting kids is for sure, you know, something that is harmful or, you know, but give yourself permission to follow yourself. Like, don't think that there's like an expert who necessarily, you know, knows better than you about what's right for you. Yeah, it's something I'm right now very passionate about, is that parents knowing that like nobody is the expert on you. You know, if anybody's the expert on you, it's yourself. But again, it doesn't mean not taking in wisdom from outside and not listening, but just give yourself much more room to trust yourself and to follow yourself. I really, 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 and I'm hoping that's the wave of the future. Like, I think, our parents' generation was, you know, they did the like punishments and whatever, and they also followed what was outside of them. And then we switched over to let's be no punishing and let's, you know, build relationships and all that, but it's still listening to somebody outside of ourselves. And I'm hoping that now we're moving more towards let's listen to ourselves, because I really believe that if we followed ourselves, all of us would parent with respect and with, and I really believe that, by the way. People say, no, if you follow yourself, you're not going to. I think when parents didn't parent that way, it's because they didn't really listen to themselves. Meaning there's parts of themselves that were cut off from themselves, were shut off, and they didn't have access to it. I think that if we really listen to ourselves, we would want to treat our children with compassion and love and care. And like you said, not with fake or feigned respect, but really respecting them as another human who you happen to be parenting. Yeah. So.
I love that. I think about that all the time. I think about how like my kids will probably think it's like kind of weird that I like followed so many parenting accounts on Instagram, or like when they're older, what are they going to be like as parents and what's the landscape going to look for them? And I kind of always imagine that they're going to be so much more intuitive than I was, that they're just going to trust themselves so much more, that they're probably like going to get advice and they're going to listen to some experts around some things, but like to the degree that I have, like, hell no. Like, I think that's going to be like kind of bizarre to them. And if they ever see my Instagram feed, I feel like it'd be bizarre to them.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. My daughter just recently told me, when I'm a parent, I'm not going to follow a parenting account like yours. And I said, yeah. You know what? I actually think you won't need them. I believe that. And I believe you won't need them. I think you're going to be a wonderful parent without them. And I really believe that. So
yes,
yeah,
I love that.
I'm all for that.
That's,
you know,
wonderful. I love that. Blimi, thank you for not just sharing your wisdom with people who may need to hear it, but for also empowering people to listen to their own. That is so rare and so special. And you know how grateful I am for you. So thank you so much for being on this podcast again. I look forward to sharing our conversation with my listeners.
Thank you so much, Laura, for giving me the opportunity to share, you know, because I've made this shift and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to share from this like new space that I'm in. Sometimes I listen to my old podcasts, and even though I think I've always been somebody who is compassionate, sometimes I cringe at like how dogmatic I sounded or how I didn't create enough space for parents. So I really appreciate that you gave me this opportunity to sort of share my evolved message with your audience, with, you know, parents.
I want to speak to what you just said, and I want to say something that I truly believe, because I cringe listening to my old podcast too. I think in order to be a vulnerable human being who is open to evolving and to changing and to looking within and growing and expanding, that is part of the ride. We are going to feel really strange about the things that we said in the past, because we've grown and we've changed and we're different now. And that's part of being a vulnerable and fully alive human being, which is what you are. And I love that. And so thank you for being that. Thank you for being here. And I just like, I think this is only the beginning for you, Blimi. I really do. I really do.
Wow. Thank you. I'm so touched by your like faith in me. And I really feel, yeah, I feel encouraged by that. I really do. Thank you.
You're the best. Thank you for being here.
I'm Laura Max Rose, and you've just listened to another episode of Look Ma No Hands, my candid dispatches from the front lines of motherhood. Follow me on Instagram at Laura Max Rose for updates on my latest episodes. And if you like the one you just heard, I hope you'll subscribe, share it with a friend, and spread the word so others can hear it. I'm so glad you're here. Can't wait to chat again next time.